Speaking of porn.
Yes. Once again, to Crazy Comics and Stories, it's me, your charming and delightful old Uncle Rat Bastard. And at the other end of the series of tubes and wires we call the internets is Joe Crazy Writer. How you doing today, Joe?
It sucks.
Well, that's the best transition you've ever given me. That's right, kids, we're talking vampires this week.
Ugh.
What?
You know, we could have done it during Halloween, but here we are, weeks away from Christmas, or Festivus, as the weirdos like to say.
Yes.
And we're talking vampires.
Yes.
Any particular reason why?
Well, we got a comic to review.
Ooh.
We got a comic called The Resurrection of Dracula.
Dun, dun, dun.
And we got, it is not out yet. This is a comic that will be coming out soon.
Are we allowed to post any of this online, or?
We can certainly ask the creator. I'm opening it right
sure.
now.
Because then what we can do is you can look at what we're looking at and then decide if you want to do that. I know this creator. The head writer is Chris Denmead. And if you go to Facebook.com, Dracula Gender Swap. Got that? Dracula Gender Swap. Or the Twitter machine at Drac Comic Book. And you'll be able to get more information on it. Because basically, when Corey said, oh, we're going to interview a vampire comic, my brain just kind of fuzzed. Because like I said before, multiple times, you know, zombies, vampires, horror anthology. I mean, I see that generally in a comic, and I tend to pause and then go right over it. But as I was reading the description of it, you know, he was talking about how this is their gender-swapped interpretation of Dracula. And that's like, okay, you got my attention. So, again, written by Chris Denmead. I'm sure he'll call back and say, boy, that Joe butchered my name. I'm really making it.
Don't you always butcher names, though?
I'm terrible with it. And then, of course, the art is by Iseta Solaris. And I think I might have gotten that right. So,
well, that'd be a first.
Nothing. He sent us three things. He sent us a trailer for a movie, I guess, he's working in called Dracula's Guest. It's a 6-minute trailer. I'm guessing it's a trailer, and it definitely shows, how would you say, novice skills or lack of budget for doing it. You know, it starts out pretty girl in a graveyard. She's got a phone call. She's reading letters, which is very hard to pull off, no matter who the actor is. There's a quasi-animal attack, saved by a groundskeeper, who then later, when you meet Dracula, or Dracula, she doesn't know anything about the groundskeeper, but she talks in a really harsh accent and eventually leads off with our pretty young girl hand in hand off into the woods. So I'm like, ooh, can't be lesbian Draculas. I love it.
Joe knows what he likes.
I knows what I like. The comic is called Resurrection of Dracula. And I don't recall, more to come. It's a 50-page story. Is that graphic novel size?
Yes.
They're looking to release a 2017-2018. So we're actually on the ground floor on this one. And you, like I said, rush over to their Facebook page and check it out. The pages I saw, and what do we get, like a 12-page
preview? Yeah, we got a 12-page preview. It felt like it was a pitch document that you would use to pitch this to either publishers or distributors or things like that.
And it read actually pretty well. One of the big complaints I have when we used to do these reviews is that the people were tending to get too creative with the word balloons. You could never tell what was next. Panels here were laid out very well. There was no problems getting lost in the story. The art, again, this is I don't know how you say it. This is individualized art. You know, they're not going for the Marvel DC version of what you'd expect in a superhero. So you know instantly when you look at it whether or not you would like it or not. It certainly does not distract from the story. And once you're done reading kind of the setup, they give a little biography Vlada Dracul. You know, and again, this is Dracula. It's a female Dracula. And so some of the details will be the same, whereas you can look at her either in the comic book that we're talking about or Dracula's Guest. That's the name of the short film. And I guess it's designed to be... I'll have to look at this. If one leads into the other, I suppose the comic goes first, and then you would look at the trailer, which is kind of a setup for it. So, I thought it was okay. What did you think on this one, Corey?
It's for a pitch document. I thought it was okay. The art needs some work. It seemed a little crude. It seemed a little unfinished. It felt more like layouts than actual finished art. So I'd want a little more polish in the art. The story, the setup was okay. It told me what was going to happen. The only thing is I thought the narration was, the prose was a little purple for me. And I think with a better artist, you can have the artist show more of the story. I'm a very big fan of, with comics, show, don't tell. And it's one of the things that when I read a book, show me who the character is. Don't tell me who the character is. Don't say, you know, this is a kind man who likes to eat vegetables and goes out on Saturday nights. Show him being kind. Show him eating vegetables. Show him going out on a Saturday night. So, as this was a pitch document, my review would be do a little more of showing, a little less telling. Go over the verbiage one more time, make sure it's not overblown, and the art needs a little more polish. He did send me an email earlier today saying that he is getting a new artist for the book, so he's going to be sending along some of those pages. But I like the idea. I like the idea of a gender-swapped Dracula. Because Dracula is one of those characters that there's not much left you could do with the character. They've done everything from him being a monster to him being an allegory for Eastern Europeans invading England to a tragic figure to a romantic figure to a comedy figure. There's very little left that hasn't been done with Dracula. But if you do a gender swap, you can play with those conventions, especially since a lot of the sexual attraction of Dracula is that he's able to put women under his spell. And it was in the original book. Joe, have you ever read Dracula?
I don't think I have. No.
One of the most racist things I've ever read. It's very much about these Eastern Europeans are coming to England to take our women, and because they're otherworldly and exotic, women can't have no power against them. But I think if you do a gender swap and you can play with that you know, the vampire attraction stuff. You can do new narratives. So I'm interested to see what's going to be done with this. It's a good start, but to me it felt very unfinished and unpolished and still needed somebody to kind of go over it as an editor to help refine what it was doing. I think the best way to put it is this was a good first draft, but I want to see where it goes from here.
So if you were to get this, say, like as a preview in Box Day or whatever, would this be something you'd go, hey, I think I'll check this out or look more for it?
I would want to look more for it, especially since it seems like this is being sent out real early on in the process. He's got a new artist. So another thing I would say to the creators is don't send your stuff out until you're absolutely sure this is what you want people to see. I know it's really exciting to get that idea out there and get feedback on it. But remember that when people see it, they're going to see it as a finished product, whereas you are still in the creator process. So hold back your excitement a little bit. Wait till you've got the stuff ready.
Now, do you think this would work better? Because they're going to go as a graphic novel. And my problem, of course, is I don't like to shell out graphic novel money for something that's untried. Do you think they may be better off, I don't know, putting it online as a webcomic, trying the, you know, this would be, let's see, 50 pages would be, what, two or three comics, going that route before committing to a graphic novel? Or do you think it's all out, just do the graphic novel?
I think it's going to depend on how they're going to be marketing it. Who is your market? Who's your audience? You know, we're comic shop people. We're used to, oh, you pick up the comics, and then if you like it, you get the collected version. But when you go to a bookstore, say like a Barnes & Noble, they don't even stock regular monthly comics. It's just trade paperbacks. If you go to Amazon, you know, you don't want people to go, okay, this month you buy part one, next month you buy part two, next month you buy part three. So if he's going to be bypassing the normal comic shop market, I think just a standalone graphic novel or a series of graphic novels would be a good idea. And the fact that he's also making a movie, you know, maybe the movie markets the comic or vice versa, you're looking at a very different market from what we're used to. So I'll want to see where this goes.
You may want to go back and look at some of the podcasts we've done where we're talking about, so you've got a property, how are you going to get people excited about it? I mentioned the Facebook page, the Twitter. It's a good way to start, you know, reaching out to podcasts like ours. Definitely get your local comic stores involved. You may find you have a bigger local draw than trying to do it national-wise. Just, you know, work at it and try to get things out. You know, I saw that for the film, they did try to do a Kickstarter that apparently failed, which is why we have that little trailer. Maybe just bypass the film, get a decent graphic novel. Who knows? You might be able to pass the sucker around and get a studio interested in it. Certainly a lot of things we've seen at professional levels, you know, read more like, hey, you're trying to push a movie than actually make a comic series out of it.
And so there are also,
that might be something to do.
I was contacted last year by a low-budget filmmaker who wants to have a comic to sell. You know, they're going to make this movie, and they're going to go to film festivals. Because there's, you know, you don't make a ton of money, but you could go around to film festivals and do okay. That's what happened with Clerks. Clerks played at a film festival, and a distributor picked it up. And there are a number of movies that go to smaller film festivals and then get picked up, either, you know, Netflix or other streaming things, or even for theatrical release. But what they wanted to do is they wanted to have a comic that told the backstory leading up to when the movie starts. And they sent me a script, and they wanted me to look into artists, and the problem is the financing fell apart, which happens all the time in Hollywood. But maybe that could be a thing where you're dedicated to making this a film, and then you have the comic that you sell that tells either, you know, what happens before or, you know, some aspect of the story that's not on the film, that when you're at the film festival, you sell it at the film festival too. You know, we don't know what the marketing plan's going to be, but there are all sorts of different ways that a comic slash film can be used to sort of, I think, bypass the regular comic market, which isn't really very friendly to new creators right now. Unless you're with Image or IDW or Dark Horse or something like that, new creators really have a hard time penetrating the market. But one thing about vampires is they've been around since the very beginning of comics. And I thought you and I could talk a little bit about the history of vampires in comics, what we think should be done with vampires in comics. Joe, what's the first vampire story you read in a comic book?
I remember a comic book, and I might have been in Erie because it definitely wasn't code approved. And I just remember the hero on the cover in abject horror as he was being pushed backward, where a very shapely, sultry vampire was clawing away at his face and obviously going for the bite. The reason I mention that is because there's a story in there that always spooked me to this day. I'll do a quick sidebar, or to borrow Peter David's line, but I digress. The little kid was drawn into a basement, and there happened to be one of the, he's told not, don't go in the basement, it's really bad. Eventually he does go down, and later the parents are looking for him, and they can't find him, and as you pull away, it's one of those old-fashioned giant furnaces that has a grate, and somehow the kid has been shoved inside this thing, and all you see is his skeleton with his hair burnt away. And, of course, since my grandpa had one of those in his basement, that scared the bejesus out of me. I digress this way because if anybody knows what issue that was, I would love to get a copy of that comic. But I digress. Back to the regular thing, I would have to say it had to be obviously Marvel, because either it was Doctor Strange. We talked about that when we did our thing on Doctor Strange, you know, the crossover they did. Definitely in the Defenders, because they kind of did round two with Dracula. And I was always aware there was a Tomb of Dracula, because, you know, you'd pick up the comics and say, you could subscribe to these comics, and that was one of the titles. So those would probably be the most roundabout ones that I was aware of. And then, of course, you know, as you're looking through the guides and things, you'd see, oh, look, Spider-Man versus Dracula in giant size, and Tomb of Dracula had this huge run. And, you know, fortunately, due to essentials and reprints, I've been able to, you know, since caught up. Though that would probably be my earliest comic recollection, definitely through Marvel. How about yourself, Corey?
For me, it was that crossover between Doctor Strange and Tomb of Dracula. So my first Marvel Dracula story, and they ran ads for Dracula, and they mentioned it in letters pages as, you know, this really great comic. But then I picked that up, and it's like, oh, wow, this is really cool. And he beat Doctor Strange. Wow. And the next one I picked up was the Dr. Sun story in Tomb of Dracula, which then later Dr. Sun turned up in both Nova and then the Fantastic Four. So it's like, okay, yeah, this is part of the Marvel Universe. And that was really the first vampire stories I remember reading, because I've talked in the past, I was a sensitive child, and horror stories kind of freaked me out until I was like 12, 13, and would stay up on Saturday nights to watch the late-night horror movie.
Mm.
But the local CBS station at that time would also run the Hammer films. So if there was a Hammer film on Saturday night at 10:30 and Saturday Night Live, it was like, oh no, which do I watch? Which do I want? Because this was the original Saturday Night Live, which, yeah, I was obsessed with. But also it's Christopher Lee as Dracula. It was great during the summer because Saturday Night Live was a rerun and it wasn't a choice. But there were times when it's like, okay, do I want to watch Dracula Has Risen from the Grave, or do I want to see this person hosting Saturday Night Live? Well, who's the musical guest? Is it somebody I know? And there were times it was, I don't know the musical guest, and I'm not a real big fan of the host, so I'm going to be watching Dracula. since then, I've got all the Draculas on DVD and all the Saturday Night Lives from that period on DVD. So, but back then, we didn't know that would ever happen. The first vampire story I was able to find was actually the first one of the first Batman stories. Joe, you've read the real early Batman stuff, right?
I have it in the Golden Age of Batman reprints, volumes 1 and 2, which I have not gotten to because I'm still in the Superman side of things.
One of his earliest opponents was the Monk. And then we find out the Monk is actually a vampire, which later on, Matt Wagner did a sort of a modern retelling of that story as a six-issue miniseries. But one of Batman's first villains was a vampire, and over at Timely, oh, they were fighting vampires all the time. There were tons of Nazi vampires. Which is why...
I hate Nazi vampires.
Which was why in The Invaders, Roy Thomas had the character Baron Blood, who was a Nazi vampire, because all the time they would use horror villains in the Timely books. Because, man, they were just running through ideas in those Timely books. Yeah, Captain America fought pretty much every sort of Nazi you can think of. And that was really the only place where they used vampires was in things like that. There were not any horror comics until the late 40s. And you would think, with the Universal Monsters making so much money, that they would have a Dracula comic and a Frankenstein comic and a Wolfman comic. The early Frankenstein comic was actually a comedy. You know, it was a funny comic. And Frankenstein was just kind of this big oaf who got into silly adventures until horror comics started a boom late 40s and into the 50s. But really, nobody much used vampires until you got to EC. And EC used vampires all the goddamn time. They used vampires, they used werewolves, they used the dead coming back and getting vengeance upon the living. And while EC was very influential, it's funny to me how we think of... When I say that Walt Disney Comics and Stories was selling about 7 million copies, Crime Does Not Pay was selling, you know, they claimed 6 million. Sales figures are more like 2 or 3. How many copies do you think Tales from the Crypt was selling every 2 months?
Oh, a million, a billion.
350,000 at their peak.
That was close.
They were not a huge seller, but they were influential, and everybody started doing what they did. Atlas, which, you know, Timely became an Atlas, although it didn't really. Atlas was just the distributor. Yeah, it's too long and complicated to get into because it's Martin Goodman and everything he did was a scam.
It's a different podcast.
But they, if something was hot, they would jump all over it. Oh, romance comics are hot. We're putting out 30 romance comics next month. At the peak of their horror boom, they were outselling EC.
Hot comics.
You know,
hot.
4 or 5 to 1. But EC paid better rates. EC didn't jam-pack the books with ads. They were better thought of in the industry. And really, if you look at the people who go back and want to read the old ECs versus the people who want to go back and read the old Timely pre-code horror, it's night and day. Mm-hmm. I think there's only like, I don't know, 10 of us who still like the Atlas pre-code horror. But the comics code got rid of all the vampires.
Aw, now that sucks.
Please clap.
Wow. Jeb Bush is still around. Congratulations. Glad he was able to get a job here on the show.
Yep. I'd rather have crickets, but never mind.
They went home, Joe. They went home.
Are we up to my favorite version of Dracula yet?
No, we're at the version where there's no Draculas.
Well, I thought sometime in the 60s we had Dracula as a superhero.
There was that!
Yes, I'm lying. That wasn't my favorite, but I just thought
in the comics
Dracula,
code...
Is that what things have come to?
Well, in the comics code, it said, clearly, no vampires, no werewolves, no walking dead. You couldn't use the word horror or terror or weird on your cover.
Who published that?
Is that
Dell?
Yes. So what happened was, the horror comics got really tamed down. EC turned, you know, basically the only thing they had left was Mad Magazine. In the early 60s, Jim Warren wanted to do horror comics. And there's a bunch of different stories about how he got into doing them, with tons of people taking credit. What I can tell you for sure is, Jim Warren published Creepy. He hired Archie Goodwin as editor. Archie Goodman tried to get as many EC artists as he could. He wrote all the stories for the first few years. And he used the EC horror tropes. He used vampires. He used The Walking Dead. He used, you know, all of those sorts of things.
I did find a Del Dracula from 1962. No comic code on the cover.
Right.
From what I can tell. It's a movie adaptation, though.
Yes.
So they
now,
probably have to sneak around that.
Del never subscribed to the comics code.
Yeah, they had their own wholesome type of pledge that would pop up every so often.
Yeah, until Del was no longer distributing, on the inside front cover, usually they would have Del's pledge to parents. And they didn't worry about it because they were publishing Disney comics, and they were publishing movie adaptations,
yeah.
And they were their own distributor. Most comics would go to the comics code because distributors would not touch them if they didn't
mentioned
have the
that
code.
Because the origin of the new Dracula
is the second issue.
Yeah, which occurred in 1966. And if you want, it lasted till, I should say the last issue showed up as issue 4 in 1967, because then in 72, 73, they just reprinted through 6 through 8, like from number 2, number 3, number 4.
Yeah.
So they basically, there is no Dracula Del number 5. It goes number 1 was the movie, 2 to 4
was
the actual
god-awful superhero version.
Don Siegel, Bill Fraschio, I'm looking at you. And then
they
reprinted it. Basically, Dracula 2 was number 6, Dracula 3 was number 7, Dracula 4 was number 8. So they did get some good use out of the at least the three issues they did. So.
And what it was, they were, in the 60s, they were trying to catch on to the superhero boom. You know, when the Batman superhero show hit, and there were all the superhero cartoons, it was a big superhero boom. And then that faded out pretty quick, and their book was terrible.
Yeah.
But then in the 70s, you had a horror boom. And horror comics and horror magazines were really big in the early 70s. But the thing that caused the change in the comics code, Stan Lee was wanting to do more. He wanted to do comics that were aimed at college-age kids. And he and Martin Goodman, I've recently read memos where Martin Goodman was very upset with that. And he said, if we lose the kids, we're going to lose our sales. Can't lose the kids. You got to dumb down your stories a little bit. But he wanted to push the boundaries of the comics code to sort of open it up a little more. So, Amazing Spider-Man 100. What was the plot of Amazing Spider-Man 100, Joe?
I think that was the introduction of Morbius.
It was also where Spider-Man grew 2 more arms.
Mm.
And Stan wrote that issue. Roy Thomas wrote the second issue. And it no one has said anything, but it really felt like Stan just went, you deal with it. But to get around the comics code, they had Morbius, the living vampire. He wasn't the undead. He was a man with a rare blood disease who, in trying to create a cure, made himself into a living vampire. And he had the same powers of a vampire, and he needed to drink blood. And in 71, the Comics Code reformed and allowed vampires and werewolves and things like that, as long as they were done in a respectful manner. Still couldn't do zombies, though.
For God's sakes, respect your vampire.
That's why in the 70s, Marvel used the term Zumbify, which they got from Robert E. Howard. And they could not use zombie in a regular code-approved comic till 89. Because in 89, the code said, oh, okay, you can have zombies. And you can have gay people, too. All right, fine, you can have gay people in your comics. That's right, homosexuality was not allowed by the Comics Code until 1989. But once that change in the Comics Code happened, boom, there's Tomb of Dracula. Marvel's longest-running and best-selling of their horror books in the 70s. And you had vampires as bad guys in other books. I wasn't reading DC, so I don't know if DC did any vampire stories. I haven't read any in their, quote, mystery, unquote, books, which was their horror line of House of Secrets, House of Mystery, Witching Hour, Door into the Unknown, things like that.
Yeah, I'm hard-pressed. That's why when we talked earlier about what was your first exposure to a vampire, Marvel came up. I can't think of anything DC.
I know that when I started reading Batman, Gary Conway was writing, and he had a Batman versus vampires to the point where Batman was bitten by a vampire and kind of became a vampire, which has this there's one issue, beautiful Gene Colan cover of the typical Batman pose, except he's got the big vampire fangs. And I was already reading Batman at the time, but it's like, oh man, Gene Colan's doing a vampire story in Batman. This is awesome.
Batman!
And for some reason, in the mid-80s, Jim Shooter put forth an edict that the vampires had to go away. So we talked, when we did our Doctor Strange story, we talked about how there was a four-parter in Doctor Strange where he read the Montessori formula and destroyed all the vampires. And this was after they'd done a story in the X-Men about Storm being bitten by a vampire. And I really liked that X-Men story. It was, you know, Claremont could do really good stuff back in the 70s and 80s, and I really liked his vampire stories in the X-Men. He did that, and then he did an annual with the X-Men versus Dracula. But then, no more vampires! Vampires are gone!
All gone.
Vampires bad.
They suck.
And then when Shooter was gone, yeah, bring him back.
Yeah, bring him back.
And then in the 90s, when you had your shop, Marvel had an entire line for horror, because Ghost Rider had sold so well. So they brought back all of the vampire stuff, and I still have not read the Midnight Suns stuff. Joe, did you read any of the Midnight Suns?
As far as I know, I have yet to actually get them in one spot. As I dig through my vast accumulation of crap, I did run across the bagged comic, because I think they all became bagged. I don't know if it was a trading card or whatever, but I do have bits of them, and then, of course, some of them had all black covers as they crossed over. I don't know if I have the whole run, though, and eventually I will find out.
And I'm sure it's out on Marvel Unlimited.
Marvel Unlimited, yeah.
And if it's not, they're probably scanning them in.
Even as we speak, they listen to us and they say, you know, if those crazy rat bastards are going to cover it, we by God better get it online.
Not only should we get it online, we better hurry. These guys are talking about it, and they're bajillions of listeners are going to be scouring to find this stuff, because that's how influential we are. We are a national treasure.
Yes. I would trade you in for $5 if I could, but nope. Priceless we are.
Yes, I'm worth more than $5.
Well, yeah, maybe 93 cents in chemicals, but, you know, it's...
But
do you remember
my body parts? You know, you could sell my kidneys for, you know, $30,000, $40,000, $50,000.
I was remembering like when Dracula was going through a tough time, and I started reading the Essential Dracula.
Dracula's going through a tough time. He's a little depressed.
He's going through a tough time. There were no safe rooms or anything, and it was like, it got to be almost a cliche, because the beginning of almost every Dracula comic, somebody, especially some dumb female, is out alone in Transylvania and gets attacked by Dracula. And that went on for a couple issues. I don't even know if I covered it in a podcast, because it was just ridiculous. Eventually, he found his way up in the Alps or somewhere, and he had to subside by drinking goat's blood, which really torqued him off. But I think that's about as far as I got. That might have been volume one.
You're forgetting the most important time when Dracula couldn't find a victim.
Yeah, he found a goat.
No, he found a cow.
Moo.
And he drained the cow's blood, and the farmer was heartbroken, so he buried the cow. But then the cow came back 3 days later as Bessie the Hell Cow.
Now, you swear that Gerber was not on any drugs at the time he wrote that.
Complete with cape.
I want to know where they got the cape.
And Howard the Duck had to kill Bessie
and
the Hell Cow.
As Bessie flew over Howard the Duck, and he looked up at the cold, milkless udders. Oh, man.
That was sheer brilliance. That was sheer brilliance.
Oh, man. It took me a week to drink milk again.
Now, one of the things as I'm looking back over the history of vampires in comics, I would think in the 80s, when you have all these independent companies, somebody would have, you know, really jumped on the vampire thing, but there really wasn't a lot of indie comics that did a lot of vampire stuff. Warp did a weekly series called The Blood of Dracula, and it had the creative team from the first comic Mars, Mark Wheatley and William Hempel. And it was right before Hempel did Gregory.
Hi, Gregory!
One of Joe's favorites. Mm. But the one I remember, and I made a lot of money off this book, was when the company Innovation did their adaptation of Interview with the Vampire and the Vampire Lestat.
Did Joe, do you remember those at all?
They did.
Yeah, because I know there was a lot that got unfinished, but
they were able to finish those two. I don't think they were able to finish The Mummy, which was another Anne Rice novel, or Queen of the Damned. But I remember when Interview with the Vampire came out, I was working at Schindler's, and I still had that investor mentality.
Mm-hmm.
So I ordered 50 of them.
Hardcore.
I was married at the time, and my wife was like, "That's a lot of money." And I said, "You watch. Shops didn't order this. Anne Rice has a huge fan, you know, following. Worst comes to worst, we can sell them at the convention. I can sell them online." And it came out, and it was one of those books. It was $2.50 when it came out.
$2.50.
And within a week, it was selling for $20. So I remember I took mine to Dreamhaven and the College of Comic Book Knowledge, sold them 25 each for $20 each, because by then they were going for like $40-$50 a pop.
Yeah, I do remember some of those. While you do that, I'm going to look on eBay and see how they're doing.
And I know with Interview with the Vampire, they had a collected version. I don't know if they were able to put out the collected version of Vampire Lestat, because I remember I wanted to get that autographed hardcover, and it was autographed by Anne Rice, but it was, oh man, that's way too much money. I can't afford it. I just can't afford it. And I was able to pick up a non-autographed hardcover later on, which is in the vast accumulation of books. But I was really surprised that nobody really kind of jumped on the vampire thing and really dug into it.
Just a quick checking here. It looks like issues are running about 5 apiece. One guy, couple sets there for anywhere from $28 to $38. So you might have something there if you can get a couple of those mint copies out of your collection there.
And also, I'm amazed that no one has picked up the rights to republish those, because those books are still popular. You know, Anne Rice is still cranking out the vampire books. But over at Marvel, they kind of, you know, the horror thing went up and down. It never really took off well. They tried a couple attempts at Dracula. They even had Gene Colan and Marv Wolfman come back to do a Dracula miniseries, both at Dark Horse and then at Marvel. But neither one of them did very well. And now at Marvel, they've brought Dracula back as X-Men villain. And he's all different. He doesn't wear the cloak anymore. He doesn't look the same anymore. They've made him kind of into a superhero. Superhero version.
Wow. Who's doing the artwork? The same guys from the Dell version?
No. But there was that X-Men series that launched in 2010. And the first story arc was the X-Men versus Dracula, where Jubilee got turned into a vampire. And I think she's still a vampire.
And yeah, that's actually one of those X-Men characters that just disappears and everybody forget about.
But that's the version they've actually used on the animated series. That version showed up on Hulk and the Agents of S.M.A.S.H. and the Avengers series. Kind of the super villain version of Dracula.
Super Drac. And the Drac Pack. Now it's Saturday morning cartoon.
As I'm looking over the history of vampires, the only two series around vampires that actually were successful and did well were Tomb of Dracula and, of course, Vampirella. And Vampirella wasn't a normal vampire until just recently. Joe! It's an ask the Joe, because I could tell the story, but the
story's
weird.
Are you
going to
ask me, what do you call a dog owned by Dracula?
No.
A bloodhound.
I'm going to ask, do you know Vampirella's origin?
Well, I heard she was a vampire, I heard she was an alien, and I actually got to meet her a couple times.
Oh, I got a picture of me with her, where she's got her arms around me. Hey, now.
There's nothing like a fat, out-of-shape comic retailer, you know, up with a model of Dracula's daughter. I actually, I remember talking with her, and, you know, she was... I just asked, how do you do this? I mean, it's cold in here. And she says, well, I'm a professional. It's what I'm supposed to do.
Well, and she had a leotard on, too.
Yeah. So it was, well, no, not when I saw her. But, you know, it was like that hippie California vampire. You know what they like. A cool man, real ghoul.
The original origin of Vampirella was actually created by Forrest J. Ackerman, who is also the man behind Famous Monsters of Filmland, and had a mansion filmed with horror movie props. Millions of dollars worth that he, as he got toward the end of his life, he had to sell off a lot of to pay his medical bills.
But you know I Count Dracula took up acting, right? It was in his blood.
Yet, as bad as that joke is, the origin of Vampirella is just as silly.
I know, that's why I got to tell you about why did the vampire baby stop having baby food? He wanted something to sink his teeth into. All right, I can't delay you any longer. Go ahead and tell him how that Dracula likes to have his food in bite-sized pieces.
So, Vampirella, her real name, is from the planet Draculon. And the rivers there aren't filled with water, they're filled with blood. So she's brought to Earth by mystic means, and teams up with a former stage magician, and for 113 issues of the magazine, she was the lead feature, and they would have, you know, horror stories in the back, like in all the other Warren books, but they would go forth and have adventures.
Why does Dracula live in a coffin? Because the rent is below living standards.
Joe, if someone were to do a vampire series, Because DC tried one called Scarlet about a vampire hunter in the DC universe. Do you think a vampire series could work in either of the two main comic book universes?
I would never say no, but I would have to think a bit about how to get that to actually work well. You know, I mean, are you going to go all out horror, and or do you want to make it, you know, kind of like, what would Dracula do in a modern society? I mean, would he actually? I can't see Dracula hanging on the fringes, picking off victims one by one. He might end up, I don't know, I'm thinking there was a movie once where one of the images were they had humans and they were basically being held like cattle as they siphoned blood off these people. You could almost think of him like he might become a blood dealer or something, or maybe, you know, he was always a high-stakes, proud man. I can't see him. He might end up being like a kingpin of horror almost, you know. I'm going to control things and keep us, you know, he'd probably open up a bank to deal with everyday suckers.
Ugh.
Sorry, but I mean, you get what I'm meaning. You know, it would be a different take. How would they deal in the modern world? And there's been movies in that, so maybe it's not that original a concept, but...
The first thing I would want to know is this about the people hunting the vampires or from the vampire's point of view? Because we've had, you know, Tomb of Dracula, while it had Dracula's point of view, it was about the people hunting him, much like how Master of Kung Fu is about the people trying to stop Fu Manchu. They were both kind of similar in that regard. And if you're going to do a vampire series, if the vampire is, you know, a traditional vampire, where it's not like Angel from Buffy the Vampire Slayer or the Anne Rice vampires that are all mopey about the fact that they're vampires.
Can I do a bit of digression?
Sure.
I had no idea that the actor who was Angel is also the main actor in Bones.
Really?
It hit me the other day because I don't watch Bones, and the characters are so different. I mean, it's called acting. And the reason it caught my attention, because they're making a big deal, this is his final season. And then as I'm watching this, it hit me like a brick. Like, holy cow, that's him! And, of course, I still have no idea what the actor's name is, but...
David Boreanaz.
Yes, I mean, that was just amazing. But I digress.
But I think in the superhero realm, if you're putting it in a superhero world... You would have to deal with the fact that, and they did this in the 70s where, oh, Spider-Man knows Dracula's around.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, Captain America knows that there's vampires. Would you deal with that, or would it be like Tomb of Dracula where it's just regular people who are fighting against the vampires? I think, you know, and they've tried Blade a few times, who is a vampire who hunts vampires, and for some reason Blade just never catches on as a series. The movies were pretty much what kickstarted superhero movies. But man, they just can't seem to get up to work as a comic. And I wonder if it's because with vampires, what they do is kind of repetitive. And how many times, and when you read Tomb of Dracula, it gets to this too, is, ugh, how many times can he be, you know, have a stake driven through his heart and some idiot pulls out the stake?
Or you could go the, you know, not maybe not deal with Dracula, but you know, like 30 Days of Night. I mean, that was kind of a very unique take on the idea. I mean, why not descend upon a town that's in the dark 6 months out of the year?
Well, one of the problems they had is, okay, we've done that. And then they did a miniseries, and it became the point of diminishing returns, mm-hmm. where each miniseries did less and less and less till no one cared anymore.
That's kind of an interesting idea, though. I mean, how would Dracula acclimate himself into the modern world? I mean, he's a myth for most people. Like you said, would the superheroes be aware of him? Would Doctor Strange be aware of him? Of course, now with the current... line in the Doctor Strange comics, he's barely aware of anything. So that might be a not good opportunity for him to go. Would he want to set himself up somehow? I still think the business aspect would work. I mean, his castle is a freaking tourist attraction. You know, he could either take offense at that or be humorous. Maybe make him kind of more suave and witty. I'm coming to mind Lucifer on the, is it Fox?
Yeah.
You know, he's the devil, but he's a guy you almost want to pal with, you know?
Yeah, he's charming.
Yeah, kind of play that off, and, you know, you're going to have to deal with his blood sucking. Would a blood substitute work? I mean, I drink Diet Pop. I don't like it. You know, it could be. Or is it more he's got a bloodlust to hunt? Is that part of the thing as well? Because you would think if you could give a Dracula a glass of blood, especially, you know, from the blood bank, he wouldn't need to go out hunting, but maybe he does. You know, I mean, there's a lot of concepts you could deal with. You just need to find something unique.
Yeah, you got to find a hook. You got to find something different, something unique.
And if you steal our ideas, at least give us credit for it. You know, just like you guys with Resurrection of Dracula. You know, you take any of our ideas, we don't care. Just give us a little blurb in the book.
Yeah, just, you know, in the letters page, say, you know,
yeah,
thanks. Like,
hey,
thanks.
Yeah, these guys have been carping on me for a year. Why not?
Well, you know who's not carping on us for a year.
Who's that?
These guys, our sponsors.
Yes, here at Solitaire Rose Networks, we have ads. That's right, we have ads. Just like every other podcast. Come on, it's okay. Our first advertiser is our longest-running advertiser, and that's DreamHost.com. DreamHost.com is the best, bar none, web host all over the interwebs. You could go to other web hosts. You could go to the ones that have big ads on TV and everything, and they're not going to give you the service, the dependability, and the reliability of DreamHost. Head on over to DreamHost.com. Use the code CRAZY, K-R-A-Y-Z, and get $20 off your first year of web hosting. Another of our sponsors is Dollar Shave Club. Dollar Shave Club has great blades at low prices, and let's face it, you got to shave. Head over to shaved.by/C19DC. Get you some blades. They're wonderful. I use them. I use all of our sponsors. Matter of fact, head on over to crazycomics.com. Over on the right-hand side of the page, you'll see all of our sponsors. Bombas, Grays, Flaviar, Dollar Shave Club, and DreamHost. If you would like to advertise on any of the podcasts in the Solitaire Rose Network, you can. Just email solitairerosenetwork@gmail.com, subject advertising.
Well, after we do the sponsors, our lovely sponsors, and Christmas is coming up, so you know, spend money with our sponsors to buy nice presents for your family.
Yes.
And, you know, last year I told you there's other things that you could do to buy nice presents for your family. Forget those. Just do our sponsors.
Yes. Much, much better.
So, after we do that, we ask Joe, what's going on the eBays?
Now, in order to do this, I'm going to need some participation from you, Corey.
Ooh. Is this an Ask the Strode?
No. This is something different. I need you to put your fingers in your ear and count to 10.
All right.
Okay.
One.
Okay, folks, this is why I mentioned I'm still taking questions for Ask the Strode. So anything's on the table. If you've got things that are personal, podcasts, comic books, new comic retailing, fighting, wrestling.
Huh? What?
Vegas, liberalism. Oh, put your fingers back in your account to 15. Just send it to me direct. Send it through Corey. Of course, we don't want him to read it. We want it to be a surprise, and we're going to spring it on him on the 200th episode or so. So crazycomics@gmail.com.
15.
We got a few good ones
there
in
we go.
Already. Let's go ahead and keep doing it. And now that Corey's done with his fingers in his ear, we are going to ask the Strode.
Ooh. Okay, I'm ready.
Corey, do you have any signed comic books in your collection?
Oh, yeah.
What makes you want to get a comic book signed?
If it is a comic that I really enjoyed and I get to meet the creator. When I met Don McGregor in the mid-80s,
I brought my entire run of Killraven and Black Panther for him to sign. And I think I've told the story where he's signing the Killravens, and then he got to the fill-in issue, and he goes, I didn't write that. And he just tossed it at me. And
I didn't write that.
Didn't write that one.
I don't even want to touch it.
There you go. So why are we asking?
Would you ever buy a signed comic if it was by like a creator who had either passed or someone you just knew you were never going to meet?
It depends. I don't have anything signed by Kirby. I might want to pick up something signed by Kirby, but the prices they charge for this, you know, for a Kirby signature are insane.
Yeah,
and Kirby signed tons and tons and tons of stuff. So for me, it's more I want to thank them. And I don't even get books signed anymore unless it's something like, you know, Pat Broderick was at one of the conventions. And I brought one of my giant sized man things. It was one of his earliest stories. I think I've told the story where I brought it up and I said, can you please sign on this? And he said, I didn't draw any issues of Man Thing. And I flipped through and I said, yeah, you did right here. Oh, wow. I didn't know that.
You done did do some Man Things. I mention it because I've spent a lot of time as I'm going through my collection and I've found I have oodles. Well,
oodles.
61 to be precise, of comics that have been autographed by the creator. Some have the certificate of authenticity. Some were bought like through Dynamic Forces. Some were just like when I met Joe Linsner, I had him autograph a copy of Wolverine and the Black Cat Claws 2 hardcover. And now that I read it, I put it on eBay. So if you're interested and they make good Christmas gifts, as you mentioned, or even a Festivus gift for the Corey, put your fingers in your ear again.
One.
I got nothing to say about that. I just wanted him to do it. So anyways, you could just head over to Crazy, K-R-A-Y-Z. Let me know one of our esteemed listeners, and I will
post something
off my vast accumulation of crap. And Corey doesn't even need to know. K-R-A-Y-Z. We're done.
Oh, well, once we're done with the eBays, we get to my favorite part of the show. No, 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 not the part where I eat pie for the next 30 hours. Freaking and geeking. Joe, what are you freaking on?
Well, I only got two freakings and geekings. One is semi-serious. The other one is kind of, whatever. Which one should I start with?
Well, let's do the serious one first.
Oh, okay.
Hold on. I need to put on my serious face.
Oh, I should probably put on pants for this.
Oh, please, for the love of God, wear pants whenever I have to see you.
Ugh.
And a shirt, by the way. I've seen your voting picture.
Not counting parking at your place for WrestleMania, how much have I spent in the last few months on my car, my beloved truck?
Well, at least $500.
Yeah, and that was just for my wheels.
No, I meant for the accident.
Oh, the accident.
Oh, that's
yeah.
Right. You did have to buy new tires,
yeah,
too.
New tires. So I'm at about $1,100 now. And, of course,
you
could have
bought a new truck for that. Well,
as I was driving my truck down to the post office to, you know, because one of the things I pride myself on my eBay is try to get things in the mail within a day, I noticed the five-letter word and a bing on my dashboard that you probably never want to hear.
Brake.
Ooh.
My brakes may be going. Or not.
Do you have like a warranty for this thing?
Well, no, because I bought it used to begin with. But the problem is, of course, is in today's cars, they just give you idiot lights. Because what they do is you bring it to the dealer, they'll plug it in, and the computer tells them what the problem is. It could be something serious, like, you know, the entire thing's shot, and I'd better find myself a soft tree to use as a parking brake, or it could just be the brake fluid's on, or it could just be one of them dumbass lights that just pops on every 50,000 miles just to frighten me into the shop. So either way, I got to deal with it. And of course, it's going to get butt-ass cold very soon, about the same time that I got to get my truck in to have the brakes checked. So I tell you, you treat them nice, you spend the money, you give them the good stuff, and they just turn on you.
At least you didn't clean its apartment.
Yeah.
Wait,
yeah.
What?
Oh, the second thing, which is more minor, I got my box day, and I got myself a lovely copy of Champions number 2. Unfortunately, I...
did not order number 1.
Yeah, I that was one of the books I cut back on. But apparently, I couldn't read my shorthand, because what I do is I write down, I go through previews, and I have it all in a notebook, so that I that's my first run through. And then I can also flip backwards, because, you know, I've talked in the past about trying to find, you know, bi-monthly books or tri-monthly books or yearly books or Miss Mystic number 5, you know, those type of things. Figure out if I ordered it or not. Doesn't always work, but sometimes it does. Well, in this case, I wrote down Champions number 1, and then in a fit of I don't want it, I crossed it out, but then I put a check mark on it like I did order it, but I never got it. So now I can either go find number 1 or, you know, since I've decided I'm just dropping most of my comics, just, I don't know, throw it in the dollar bins. I'm conflicted. What can I say? And that's my freaking, Corey, what are you freaking on?
Well, first as a work freaking.
Uh-oh.
Joe?
At your work. You can't blame me.
It's time for Hanging at the Home.
Ooh, we have a hang on. I got to sit back. Pull down my pants. Grab myself a little old Minute Maid while I beat
you know, here's the problem. Here's another freaking. Start the episode by saying you're not wearing pants. Now you're saying you're pulling down your pants. Could you be consistent?
Well, I don't have my pants on. I'm just pulling them down, you know, to cover the window.
So last night I had one of my sleeping shifts at the group home.
With or without pants?
I always wear pants.
Oh, boring.
I even wear pants when I go to bed here at home.
I've seen your home. It's probably a good idea.
So I'm there. I'm on the couch. And I'm in one of the cottages where there's one of the clients who wakes up around 1 or 2 in the morning and comes out and, you know, tools around the house, makes sure that everything's fine in her wheelchair, tools around the house, and then goes in the living room and gets in one of the recliners and sits down in the recliner and goes to tie her shoes and usually falls asleep while tying her shoes. Not last night, though. Last night, she came in the living room around 3 o'clock, saw I was sleeping on the couch, went over and turned on the lights, and thought it was the funniest damn thing she'd ever seen in her life.
Oh, I'm laughing.
So the light comes on, and I hear, ha, 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 ha. And the staff who's doing the awake part of the shift comes in. No, Jeannie, turn off the light. Let him sleep. She turns off the light.
And then?
And then about 20 minutes later, I'm woken up by my pillow being snatched out from under me and being hit with it. And then, Jeannie, stop it. Lay back down. Go back to sleep. And then, I don't know, about a half hour later, I wake up and I've been kind of smothered with stuffed animals. Somebody gave her like this 4-foot-tall stuffed animal dog that she wanted me to see, and I wasn't paying enough attention to it, so she put it on top of me and started pushing down. And when I, Jeannie, leave me alone, let me sleep, ha, ha, ha. And then the light, yeah, half hour later, light. So all from 3 in the morning to 5:30, about every 20 minutes, I get woke up by something like that.
Folks, if you would like to help Corey recreate this, give me an email and I'll send you his address and the spare key I had made while he was passed out one.
Dear God. So I was so tired, I got home, and I had to turn around, get a shower, go into the full-time job. So I get home, I drag my sorry ass in the shower, I clean up, I get my clothes on, I throw my coat on, I make sure I have the stuff I need for work, I get in the car, and I'm driving to work, and I get about halfway there, and I go, oh, I don't know if I grab my key card. I better check my vest, and I reach into my coat. I'm not wearing a vest.
Ew.
I did not put on a vest before I put my coat on. I felt naked all day. And it was really weird. People were like, something's not right about you. Like, yeah, I didn't wear a vest today. Oh, that's it. I actually went to my supervisor and said, yes, I know, I didn't wear a vest today. I'm sorry, it will never happen again. And at first she gave me this look like, what are you talking about? And then she was like, oh, yeah, you're not wearing a vest. That is weird.
Grossed.
And it was my weekend to work, because now with my schedule at the group home, because I'm doing all these overnights, I have one weekend where I work and one weekend where I don't. This was my weekend to work, and this was also box day.
Box day, box day.
So I got my box day, and then had to spend pretty much all day at work on Sunday, so I didn't get a chance to play and read the comics and have fun. And Joe, pull me out of this tailspin. What are you geeking on?
Well, Corey, did you get that thing I sent you?
No.
Oh, yeah. Come look on the G drive. I sent you an MP3.
You sent me an MP3?
Yeah.
Oh. Let me play that.
I have succeeded because I have had incredible city employees that have been with me every step of the way. Staff members in my office that picked up every challenge that I gave to them and ran with it and made and got the work done. Particularly, if I may just point out one person, Chris Ryder, who has... So even though I'm not convinced that she wasn't trying to kill me at times, she has kept my life sane. She's kept Connie's and our kids' life sane. But I'll just tell you a quick story. I was in Pittsburgh for the National League of Cities meeting 2 weeks ago, and I was having dinner with some folks from the White House. And they said, Mayor, you know that in every city in this country, when we want something done, we go directly to the mayor, with one exception. We'd much rather talk to Chris Ryder than you. It's true.
Well, that's pretty cool.
Yep. The mayor of St. Paul did a big old announcement saying that he was not running for mayor anymore. But what he did is, as he was thanking people, he actually gave a name shout out to my wife that you just heard, and gave that story about the White House and all that. So I'm very proud of her. She was very surprised, which is good because she needs that. And, of course, I'll be free all weekend. I'll be at work all weekend, but she actually got an invite to go to one of the White House parties, one of the last ones the Obama administration's having. So she'll be gone, and I'll be at work.
So I'm very proud. Are you going to wear pants to work?
No promises. Well, probably. They actually give me uniform pants. So anyways, kudos to my
lovely wife. So you'll wear pants if I give you a uniform.
Speaking of box day, I'll just kind of go through what I quickly read. I read Avengers 1. Again, I probably won't stick with this for long, but I will stick with it through the Kang story, because I do love me a good time travel story. Again, like zombies, vampires, you make up the rules, but I enjoy reading it. I'll agree with Corey. Thanos 1 is really good. It'll be interesting to see how they do it, because... you know, you go from Thanos is one of the big heavyweight bad guys of the Marvel Universe to when Jim Starlin gets a hold of him, he's like, well, you know, maybe he's not all that bad. You know what I'm saying? But now he's back to being bad, and we're going to have to see what's happening. I'm really enjoying Dead No More, the Clone Conspiracy, more than I thought. If you're reading just the Clone Conspiracy, at least I know the Amazing Spider-Man kind of add to the story, but they're not actually essential to the story. I'm not reading the other ones. I think it's, what, Prowler and Silk? So I don't know what's going on with those. Another book that I really enjoyed is The Unworthy Thor, which I believe is a 5-issue series dealing with Thor. And, of course, if you read that there, Secret Wars, or you're reading The Ultimate Universe, well, let's just say you should probably pick this one up. First out of the box, though, of course, I read Knights of the Dinner Table, number 237, because I love me my Knights of the Dinner Table. And... a lot of box day shenanigans going on. I've got a lot of graphic novels and stuff. Can't wait to read. In terms of older books, you know, I talk a lot about that I'm blowing out stuff and trying to whittle down my collection to the things I really want. I found a copy, or I should say copies. I still have copies of Fantastic Four number 198, 199, and 200.
Ooh.
This was the, I guess it was a five-parter. I'm missing the first two parts, but part of the storyline going up to Fantastic Four is that Mr. Fantastic was losing his powers, and then all of a sudden he was, some benefactor supercharged him to get his powers back, and he realizes as the rest of the team is kidnapped, it was, in fact, Dr. Doom. So this is essentially Doom's got a couple plans going on to take over the world. Back then, he was big on taking over the world. Mr. Fantastic going after him, rescuing the rest of the Fantastic Four. And then, of course, the 200th issue is the one-on-one fight between Mr. Fantastic to Dr. Doom. And it was a fight to the finish until, you know, he got better. But it's a really, I mean, when this storyline hit, it was just agog. I mean, this was the way they ended it, the way they left it, and just a lot of fun to read and pull those out again. Found a couple what-ifs that I read. It was interesting because this was, I believe, the second volume of What If. And let me just get these organized. In terms of which issues were interesting, I got What If Captain Marvel Had Not Died, What If Fantastic Four Had Lost the Trial of Galactus, and What If the X-Men Died on Their First Mission. And of those, I found What If Captain America Had Not Died was meh. It was okay. You know, the story premise was kind of weak. The Fantastic Four Had Lost the Trial of Galacti was a little better, but again, a lot of the what-ifs at this time suffered from the thing that, well, we're going to, I don't know, if they'd have written them like, okay, guys, you're going to have to keep writing this in the Marvel Universe instead of, here's a one-shot so we can kill everybody we want and not worry about it. The story was better than the Captain Marvel one, but not as much fun. The X-Men one, What If They Died on Their First Mission, I thought was really well done. And what's interesting as you're reading through these is they're very much written so at the period of what's going on, because obviously we know, I think Captain Marvel's still dead, but you know we know some of the characters that they don't talk about. There are certain things going on where you have to remember, oh yeah, this was going on at the time or that was going on at the time, but I think a lot of these are Marvel Unlimited, so if you're interested, pick them up, or just drop me a line. Maybe I'll just send them to you. I'm that type of guy. Book-wise, I'm wading through Outland, and of course, it took all of three issues before Opus showed up, so that was their three strips. So it's fun to read. You know, very much late 80s, and you know, he doesn't do enough of them, but I always like the footnotes where he talks more about what's going on in the time. So we sat down, and my wife's been trying to get my daughter into watching the Blues Brothers. And last night we sat down, and Holly sat with us, and you know, she had a coming back from work. She said a long day, she's a little tired. So we're watching the Blues Brothers, and you know, I'm wide awake watching this. It was the extended cut, so there were things on it that I'm not quite sure if they were in the original movie or not. I had never seen Blues Brothers until I got it on a DVD. I always saw the, you know, the cut version that TBS always ran. So, you know, again, I'm not the one to ask, but halfway through it, and I think they're at the part where they just showed up to talk to the nun teacher, and my daughter's like, what's the plot of this? definitely not impressed with the Blues Brothers. Matter of fact, she fell asleep halfway through it and then went to bed. My wife and I finished it up and, of course, enjoyed it. And, of course, my daughter's always like, yeah, I'll watch the rest later. No, you're not.
You better think. Think about what you're trying to do to me. Yeah, think.
Think.
So those musical sequences still give me chills. Especially the Ray Charles.
Oh,
and then
yeah.
The whole, you know, then they outside, everybody's dancing. And that wasn't done anymore. You know, that's very much like an old 40s or 50s musical. That wasn't done anymore when that movie came out. And I remember at the time, people, you know, my age, I was like, what, came out in 1980, right? So I was 16.
83, I think.
No. Saturday Night Live, it was... Look it up, Joe.
Well, you talk. I'll look it up.
I'm guessing it's 1980. But either way, it was early 80s. They didn't have movies like that. People weren't used to it. And I remember people coming back going, I don't know about that movie, man. It was really strange. And me, I've watched older musicals. So when I saw it, it's like, this is just an old movie musical with modern jokes.
Yeah, no, 1980. Now, I have a question. Did you ever try to suffer through Blues Brothers 2000?
Yes, I did, because I was actually excited about it when I saw the musical lineup. And to this day, I will defend that soundtrack. It's one of the greatest soundtracks of any movie ever.
I didn't ask about the soundtrack. I was talking about the movie.
And the musical sequences were, you know, you've got all these great musicians playing on the screen, but everything around it was shit.
No. Movie.
Right. Like I said, all the music sequences, brilliant. Everything around them was shit.
The only thing I got through is the beginning, you know, where Elliot walks out and he's waiting and waiting and waiting. And then, you know, somebody shows up and has explained to him that Jig died. And that was kind of sad.
Yeah.
You know, because we all know that, you know, John Belushi passed away. But I got to tell you, even to this day, I have a hankering for white bread. Four fried chickens
and a Coke.
That's all I'm geeking on. Corey, what you geeking on?
Box Day is probably the biggest damn Box Day I've ever had in my life. So we will get to that after my other geeking.
Ooh.
Joe, I do you remember when I was dating a woman who lived in Canada?
Lived in a shoe? No, wait. Canuck. Yes, I does.
Dated her for 3 years. And
yeah.
Then, you know, we...
I remember you telling me whenever you were around her friends, they tried not to say, hey.
Yes. She told me that after we broke up. She's like, yeah, whenever I was around you, I tried not to say, hey, and my friends did the same thing because we didn't want to be made fun of by the American. And I was like, I don't care about that.
Good
and
one,
also,
eh?
South Park was really big at the time with the Canadian stuff, you know, Terrence and Phillip.
So you know everything about that.
Yes. But one of their fast food place is called Tim Hortons. And here in the U.S., it's, you know, you go to a fast food place and you get a burger, fries, and a Coke. And there you get coffee and a donut. Well, and the donut holes are called Timbits. And I remember at the time, every time I would go, it was like, oh, my God, I have to buy the biggest thing of Timbits because I need them. And I told people, you know, how in America they put powdered sugar on the donuts. No, they must put, like, crack on the donuts because they're so addictive. We here in the fine state of Minnesota now have Tim Hortons. There's one at the Mall of America. There is one in Dinkytown. And they plan to open over 100 in the Minnesota, Wisconsin area over the next 5 years. So this Friday, I will be going to Tim Hortons at the Mall of America, even though I hate the Mall of America, but I love the Tim Hortons so much. Matter of fact, Joe, what's the difference between the Mall of America and hell?
I think anyone can go to hell.
No, the Mall of America only has 4 levels, whereas hell has 9.
Oof.
But this was probably the most expensive Box Day I've ever had because of all the stuff that had been delayed, et cetera, et cetera. Joe, I'm going to go down my list of the big dollar stuff that showed up for my Box Day. Alan Moore's Jerusalem, the novel, the 3-volume slipcase.
Wow.
The Archie's 75th Anniversary Digest 1, 2, and 3. The Complete Peanuts hardcover box set for $99 through $2,000. By the way, I opened it up because I wanted to see what was in the last book. Have you gotten the last one yet?
I did.
And it's Peanut strips we have never seen because they were done for advertising or done for different non... You know, they've never been in the newspaper. A lot of his one-panel stuff, a lot of stuff that he did that was never printed where regular people could see him. Let's see. Complete Voodoo Hardcover Volume 2. That's reprinting some 50s horror stuff. Creepy Archives Volume 7, 8, and 20. The Deadly Hands of Kung Fu Omnibus Volume 1. Now, remember how you and I complained that the Master of Kung Fu Omnibus was one of the smaller ones? It was only like 400 pages. Deadly Hands of Kung Fu Omnibus is 1,000 pages. And a lot of articles in this thing, too. A lot of reviews of movies you'll never find anywhere. The Life and Legend of Wallace Wood Hardcover Volume 1. The Marvel Masterworks Black Panther Hardcover Volume 2, which is the Kirby series. You know, the first one was the Don McGregor stuff. This is the Kirby series, and then the follow-up of the people who came on after Kirby. Shang-Chi, Master of Kung Fu, Omnibus Volume 2, and the hardcover Super Weird Heroes, which reprints a story of some of the most bizarre, obscure heroes from the Golden Age of comics. And I have next weekend off. It is a 3-day weekend for me, Joe. I'm taking off Friday, and I will be off Saturday and Sunday because I plan to do my holiday stuff, you know, so I can put it all in the mail. I may not get to any of the holiday stuff because this stack of comics here
is
ultra expensive and very tall.
I like tall.
Yeah, I could spend like a day and a half just reading the Deadly Hands of Kung Fu Omnibus. And that's not counting the magazines from Tomorrow's, the Knights of the Dinner Table, previews, stuff like that. So, yeah, I'm set. Oh, and I got my new Judge Dredd shirt. I had to buy it because it's a picture of Judge Dredd pointing a gun at the person looking at you, and it says, "Democracy isn't working."
Mm-hmm.
And I ordered that before the election. Believe it or not, kids, you have listened to us blather on about porn for an hour and a half. No, it's comics. We blathered on about comics.
Comics, porn, half of one, handful of the other.
One of these days, maybe. No, we've already done an episode on porn comics, haven't we?
Maybe I don't remember. How many of these things have we done?
280.
Ooh.
And maybe, you know, with our new series in review, we could do Cherry Pop-Tart. So as we say every week,
what I had for breakfast, Pop-Tarts.
I'd love to have a Cherry Pop-Tart for breakfast in the morning. Oof. Believe it or not, kids, you've listened to us blather on about funny books for an hour and a half. And as we say every week, the comic we like the least, we still like better than the comic that you like the most. Joe?
And now back to our regularly scheduled chaos. Hit my music! Funk is on a roll.
Funk is on a roll. Hey, yo! Can somebody call my mama? It's about to get funky up in here.
Done, bitches!